we in America should be grateful to God for the blessings he's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation, because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. We are doing a little bit of a rapid fire Thursday here today. So make sure you cue your call up, 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. So hopefully you will cue your call up. So we're going to get right back to phones. Let me go to Leanne. Leanne's calling us from Arkansas. Hi, Leanne.
Yeah, hi there. I wanted to know, how do you find out if a bank is biblically responsible? Is that if it's publicly traded or something like
well,
that?
Well, if it's publicly traded, it's real easy. And what I mean by that is you can go to the website, just financialissues.org. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see a thing that looks like a wheel with spokes. And you click on that and you just put the symbol in there. The stock symbol, say it's Bank of America. So you would just put BA in there, BAC in there, and it would come up with a smiley face if it's biblically responsible. In Bank of America's case, it won't come up with a smiley face, or it'll come up and say that it's not biblically responsible. So that's one way of doing it. So it's a little bit easier if it's publicly traded. The hard part is, there's some great community banks out there that are not, that are biblically responsible, but unfortunately, because it's a community bank, because it's a private bank, you know, it's a little bit harder to get the access to all the things. Now, if you are a depositor in that bank and you ask them for their quarterly financial statements, maybe they'll give it to you, probably not, but they might. Certainly you can ask the question, do you know if your bank supports Planned Parenthood, or do they support the LGBT? Do they use their money to support, gambling in some way, whatever. I mean, you can ask those questions, but you're probably not, because the people are going to intentionally mislead you, but because chances are whoever you ask is going to know the answer, and they might just say what they think, you know. So it's really hard, and that is a concern. So all you can do is try to go to the financial institutions that you know are. That's why I talk about Christian Community Credit Union. You know, I worked 7 years to have a banking platform that would come alongside us. 7 years. That's how long it took me, just to give you an idea of how hard it is. And Christian Community Credit Union, they're a little beyond just being biblically responsible. They're built upon the Bible. Everybody there are, you know, that works there are believers. And they're built on a biblical worldview, and they have been for 60 years. So even a better situation. But that's one thing you can do. And thousands and thousands of partners and people with financial issues have done that across the country. And they're a great organization to grow a rapport with. If you ever need a mortgage or a car loan or anything, they're great to work with. So that's one thing you can do. But other than that, it's hard.
Okay, so if you want to get a credit card, which I called them about that, but I had to be a member and then I had to pay money, and I didn't want to pay money just to get a credit card.
Yeah, so all credit cards you have to be, all credit unions, you have to be a member. That's what allows them to be a credit union. They're made up of members. So yeah, that's the case all the time. Would have to go. You're just going to have to try to find a organization or a publicly traded bank that you can, again, put the symbol in to the website and find out.
Okay. And my question to the call screener was, if you are getting a CD and the interest is so low right now, is that the safest place to keep your money in a CD as opposed to a bank, even though you're hardly making anything? Because I have to do a low risk.
Well, if you're looking for safety, it's really the only thing you can do. So you okay. go to a bank, you do a money market account, or you do some sort of savings account that they might have, or you do a CD that they might have. And it, for your money not to be volatile at all and not to be exposed to the market risk, that's really the only thing you can do.
Okay.
You can have return, high interest return, and safety. They don't go together, unfortunately. Not today, anyway. They used to years ago, but not anymore. So
they said about a CD was that they might trade it, and they mentioned Bank of America, and I knew B of A wasn't biblically responsible, so right off the bat, that was a red flag.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they mean by trade it other than sell it to another bank like they would do a mortgage. Okay. Everybody does that, Leanne, with the exception of Christian Community Credit Union. They even hold their own loans, but they, or other credit unions, but that is, they all, you know, they're all going to stand at risk. That doesn't make it any more risky, but it does make it less control. You know, now some of the small community banks might not do that. They might in fact hold the CD themselves. They're more likely to do it. So I would continue to check the small community banks in your area.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you.
All right. I appreciate it. Yep. Let me go to Frank in Georgia. Hey, Frank. Okay. Frank, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Recently, I signed up with an IRA with my bank.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I don't have a whole lot of experience with the whole IRA stuff. But anyways, my question being, Dan, they turned everything over to Charles Schwab. They notified me email, so on and so forth. Now, that being said, I was just curious, Charles Schwab, is that going to be a biblically sound investment now? You know?
Well, it's okay that they turned it over to Charles Schwab in the sense that that's who's holding the money. It's what the money is invested in. So at the most biblically responsible company in the world, you could still have an investment in something that is supporting abortion or gambling or whatever. So you could still have that. So what matters, Frank, and I know this is kind of new to you, but what matters is how your money is invested. So give you an example. If your money was in a CD at the bank and they moved their CD holdings, this is very unlikely to happen, but they moved their CD holdings to Charles Schwab, then it would still be biblically responsible because basically your money is invested in short-term U.S. Treasury notes or bills. So that's fine. If you were in a unbiblically responsible mutual fund at the bank, and now that money is in the same mutual fund at Charles Schwab, it's still not biblically responsible. I don't know if that makes sense. So it's where it's invested. Now, the beauty of it being moved to Charles Schwab and the advantage to you in that is that you should have the availability now that you're with Charles Schwab to put that money anywhere you want. You're going to have that availability. So now you couldn't do that at the bank, but you can do it now. And you could call Charles Schwab and say, hey, look, I want my money put in this ETF at Timothy. I'm just giving you an example. Or I want my money put in to a Timothy Mutual Fund, or I want it put into this individual stock. So you have the advantage now that you can do that, so that's the upside. And I would suggest that you do that. Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Seeley. It is great to be here. 610-363-1110. If that's our phone lines, if you want to queue your call, you're welcome to do it. I was talking about the debt that companies are going to be taking on and buying back their stocks. And let me just point something out to you before I get to phones so that it is not a question in your mind. So companies do this. It's a good thing for company. But here's what I want you to think about. And I know you can't think about it like I think about it from a deep analytical perspective, which is now going to be something that I've got to be concerned about as I think about advising all our partners as we move forward in the economy. But if stocks are, if companies are buying $1 trillion worth of market cap back into their company, so is that a good thing for the bottom line? Yes. Is it going to add to their earnings? Yes. Is it going to help earnings reports probably for the third, fourth quarter? Yes. It's going to do all those things, right? It's going to, it's a way that they can kind of shore up their balance sheet, which is going to help earnings. Could add as much as 2% to their bottom line on earnings. That means we could have another good, better than expected earnings. Already the naysayers are saying, oh, you know what, forget about that earnings recession that we called 5 quarters ago, and then we called it 4 quarters ago, then we called it 3 quarters ago, then we called it 2 quarters ago, then we called it for this quarter. Well, we're going to postpone that till next quarter. They've already done that because this earnings report, this earnings season looks like it's shaping up to be pretty good. Well, if they're going to do $1 trillion worth of buybacks, and a lot of that happening in the latter part of the year, you would expect earnings reports to be a little bit better just for that reason or not. Is that a good thing? Well, it's a good thing for sentiment. It's a good thing for markets. It's a great talking point. It makes people feel good, right? But is there any kind of real firm reality to it? Not really. Not if there aren't economic growth that is going along with that. If there isn't that, then it starts to become, it's not going to become right away, but it starts to become a little bit of a false positive, okay, because it's not based on any real reality of growth in the underlying fundamentals of the economy, and we start looking like a market that belongs to President Obama. That's what we start looking like, just to be honest about it. So when we look at that, that is something that we've got to think about. But here's the other thing to think about. It's hard to imagine how stock prices, how markets can go down in this environment. Because one thing, and I bring this up again, I bring it up every once in a while. I usually talk about it at conference calls and talk about it somewhat confidentially to our partners. And I don't bring it up because I don't know why. I guess because I don't want everybody else that listens to this program to rediscover this. Then they talk about it, and it turns around everybody starting to believe that I'm repeating something I've heard when I said it 3 years ago. So you know what? I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to talk about it, but I'll talk about it the next conference call because that's just what's going to happen. But you know, there's some reality about this that unfortunately most of the pundits, and it would appear as though the analysts, are keeping it to themselves as well so that they can benefit from it. But we'll talk about it on a partner call. But nonetheless, it does do some things to help the markets. And we need to be around to be aware of that. But it doesn't help the markets like good old-fashioned underlying fundamentals of the economy. All right, let me go to calls and let me go to Mike. Mike's calling us from Virginia. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Dan. How you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I got you. Thank you.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to meet you back in Richmond about 2 years ago. And my wife, she's seen me twice.
Oh, well.
The question I got, I'll be turning 62. I just signed up for my Social Security.
Okay.
Number one, because I got heart trouble.
Uh-huh.
But putting that aside, I get a pension and I got a 20-year annuity, which carries me until like I'm 82 years old.
Okay.
I inherited a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA from the passing of my aunt back in January. The Roth IRA, I did take a couple dollars out of that because it's not taxable. The traditional IRA, being she was in her 70s, she has to take a minimum required distribution.
Right.
And being I'm an heir, I have to take that distribution.
Right.
The question I got is, Should I go ahead and delete that whole traditional account and put that money in like a safe place? Because we're thinking about possibly buying some rental property and go ahead and pay the taxes on the money and delete it, or should I hold on to it?
Well, it depends on how much the taxes are.
Get in there. I know the taxes going through the roof.
Yeah. I mean, if you're okay paying the taxes on it, you know, and still going to come out okay, I wouldn't have a real problem with it, particularly if you're going to turn it around and invest it into something that's going to produce some income for you. I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with it. You know, taxes aren't going to get any lower. So I don't really have – are you retired now, Mike?
I'm working part-time like 20 hours a week, but I've been retired for about 15 years.
Okay.
I retired at 48.
Okay. So yeah, I wouldn't have too much of an issue with that. I think that'd be fine. Now,
okay, well,
but just make sure that you understand how much tax it's going to be and all that, and you're okay with it.
Right. Well, thanks, Dan, and thanks a lot for all the work you're doing. And God bless you. And I look forward to seeing you. And by the way, we are members, and my wife is also a member. She contributes to the monthly, you know, show.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Mike. Man, I sure appreciate that. It means a lot. God bless.
God bless you, Dan. Thank you.
All right. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. You know, Mike just kind of outlined something that I talk about often, and this is why I don't like inherited IRAs. Now, Mike's able to do a good thing with it. That's great. Get it out of there where you can control it. You know, you're going to have an investment account, and in his case, he's probably going to put it towards some rental property. But, you know, there's something to be said for that because they're very good. You know, taxes aren't getting cheaper. Lord knows 10 years from now, he could still be paying tax on that, and who knows what tax is going to be. So I always try to encourage people and tell people all the time, look, I believe all of us ought to have a plan by which we are utilizing our retirement money, our 401k and such, that we're withdrawing some of that. And we're withdrawing some of that with the idea, yeah, we got to pay taxes, but better us pay the taxes now than pay the taxes, you know, down the road and have the flexibility of not needing the having to use the minimum required distribution and so on and so forth. So in the long run, I think it's a very good idea. And that's what we're seeing. That's what Mike's doing, and I think that everybody ought to have a plan. So let's say you're 62 years old, and every year from now until it's gone, you're taking $5,000 out, you know, of that. And yeah, you got to pay a little tax on that $5,000, but every year you're taking that $5,000 and you're moving it over to your investment account. I think that's going to serve you really well in the next 10 years, and maybe you can do as much over the next 10 years that is necessary to get it all out of there. Depends on how large it is. Sometimes you just can't do enough, and there's not going to be a possibility for you to do a month as much because you might have a very old and very a large 401k or IRA that you're doing that from, and that's fine. But do what you can. I think it's always a good thing. Let me go to Liz. Liz calling us from Virginia as well. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
So my husband and I just sold our first home, and we're very fortunate. We made about $20,000 that we are trying to figure out what we should do with. He's still finishing up his training at work. So we don't have anything put away for retirement or anything like that, but we also have three young children that we're looking at putting through a private school education. So we're just trying to decide what strategically is the best place to start saving for them or for us or how we should split
sure.
that up.
So is your intent at some point to buy another house or?
We already own the other house.
Okay, all right.
So we bought the other house and are paying a lot less in mortgage, luckily, than we were previously and are able to put away some. We're looking at being able to put away about $400 a month as well, and on top of this $20,000 that we have.
So I think that at some point in time, I do want you to consider having, you know, at least a Roth IRA account. Now, your husband at work, will he be able to participate in some sort of 401k?
He can. His job right now doesn't offer any any kind of benefits, and we're also only going to be there for three more years.
Okay, gotcha.
So I don't know. I'm just ignorant on this. I don't know if transferring that will have any penalties. Was my worry.
No, it wouldn't have any. It wouldn't have any penalties at all to transfer it to another company's 401k or to transfer it to your own personal IRA. It wouldn't be penalized or taxed or anything like that. So you could do that. But one way or another, and maybe the way to go would be just do a Roth IRA account. I would like you to put something into a Roth IRA. I would like you, I don't care how much it is, Liz, I don't care if it's $25 a month. I just think it would be wise to begin the discipline and the thought process that, hey, you know, I got to worry about my kids' education, what we have to do there. And, you know, we want to save and have emergency savings and those kinds of things. That's all good, and I want you to do that. But at the same time, you've got to begin the process of putting something into a Roth IRA, because I want that to be in front of you all the time. So,
sure.
You know, that eventually you'll say, you know, we don't even miss that 25, we can do 50, or we don't need to do 400, we can do 350 and put 50 here, or whatever it might be. But I think you need to do that. And I would just go to a brokerage account anywhere, TD Ameritrade, Fidelity.com, you know, somewhere, and open up a Roth IRA account. If nothing else, I would pick one ETF. I'll give you symbols. I know you're not aware of what all that means, but wherever you set that account up, they will be. And it's T as in Thomas, P as in Paul, L as in Larry, C as in Charlie, T, P, L, C. That is a symbol for a ETF. It's like a mutual fund, but it's an ETF. And if you don't do anything, just, you know, open that ETF and put whatever you can put in it every month. And I think that would be wise. So I want you to do that for certain. Liz, I'm gonna put you on hold because I have some other points I want to go over with you, if you don't mind holding through the break.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Sure. All right, folks, 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call up, now's a good time to do it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It is great to be here. Thank you for being with us. And we are doing this series on the difference between socialism and capitalism. Now, you may just be tuning in, but on Friday we started, then yesterday, of course, and you can go back, listen, maybe not this week, but next week you'll be able to go back and listen to some of that. And so let me just, I guess, review a little bit. First of all, I want to do this because it's so important. It's important for you not only to be an informed voter, but in order to be able to defend what you're voting for. And you're voting for, I hope, to maintain the greatest system of economics in the world, and that is free market economies, capitalism. And we want to defend that. And we have been the best at being able to maintain our economic freedoms than anybody in the world. So we talked about this notion of what the socialists think about capitalism. And it always goes to equality, right? So we talked about that. We talked about that on Friday. And then on Monday, we talked about the notion of who owns everything. So in capitalism, it's privately owned or publicly traded companies. Socialism is owned by the states, and how that works, why is one is good, one is bad, and some of the ins and outs of that. So today, we're going to talk about effectiveness. And when you are an effective, a very effective worker, producer, manufacturer, whatever it might be, then your efficiencies of all of that become greater and greater. And there is no system on earth where the efficiencies are better than they are here in America. It's the best place. It works amazingly so well that America is considered among developed nations one of the most productive nation, if not the most productive nation in the world. So companies want to come to America because of our productivity and the capabilities of our productivity. So capitalism, it is argued, is about profit. That's all they care about, is about profit. But wait a minute. In capitalist system, you're not going to have any profit if you don't incentivize profit, if you don't incentivize productivity, if you don't incentivize efficiency and effectiveness. If you're not incentivizing those things in a private company, you're not going to have any productivity. And see, capitalists encourages firms, this would be from a government perspective. You've heard me talk about the government saying, oh, the government, we need to create jobs. No, the government does not need to create jobs. The government don't, that's not their job to create jobs. Their job is to create an environment in which private sector companies want to create jobs because they need to grow. That's their job. So capitalists encourage firms to be more efficient, to do things like cut costs, to innovate, to modernize, to maybe reinvent something, some new products, change the way, invent totally new products, for people. Whether it's one person, to do the best they can do and constantly be changing with the times and what is necessary to keep their company productive. If companies fail to keep up with the needs of people, and in a country like America, where not only needs, but we are a consumer-driven country, we are depending upon people spending money, then you need to keep up with the wants of people and listen to the wants of society and the needs of society. It is simple. In a capitalist environment, you either provide for the needs and wants at a competitive price, or your option is you go out of business, unless you're General Motors, where your option was not provide that, not be efficient, not be effective, not be streamlined, not be innovative, not to have ingenuity, all those things, and you still don't go out of business because the government created that moral hazard. But the idea is to never let a company not go out of business. To say, look, it's understandable you got to go out of business. We got that. We have bankruptcy laws that will protect you against that. But at the same time, we're not going to bail you out so you can stay in business. You go out of business. You tried. You worked hard. It didn't work. Go out of business. That makes room for other people to come out of it. And it makes room for you to become a better business person. When you go into business, you're probably going to be even better. There's not too many great business people that didn't fail numerous times before they finally succeeded. So when they go out of business, it allows the resources from the old company to flow into new companies. It allows the market share from the old companies to flow into new companies. Maybe new companies that are more efficient in the areas of the economy that are needed. This is something known as somewhat of a creative destruction. It is yes, destruction of a company by allowing this, but it's creative destruction. It's good destruction. It builds ingenuity. It builds productivity and management system, and management. In a socialist government, ownership generally leads, government ownership generally leads to inefficiencies. Why? Because in workers and managers don't have any real innovation or modernization, you know, modernizing the productivity. They don't have any real incentive to be innovative or to, as a manager, to streamline the systems and modernize the system. You know, the joke many years ago during the old Soviet Union was that they pretended to pay us and we pretended to work. So they pretended to pay. They didn't have any money. They barely paid us. They called that pay, and they kind of pretended like that we were getting a good thing and to pay us. And it was okay because we pretended to work. In other words, they didn't get anything for it. They got no productivity. They got no ingenuity. They got no systems that thrived and worked well. They were state-owned, working for the state and doing what the state required, the absolute minimum for them to get along. The state didn't have any money because they didn't have any productivity. They didn't have any productivity and efficiencies and innovativeness and effectiveness, so therefore they didn't make any money on what they did. So they couldn't pay any better wages. They couldn't incentivize workers. They couldn't modernize their plants or their manufacturing or what they did. They couldn't innovate because all of that takes money, and they didn't have any money because they didn't do that in the first place. They didn't have the opportunities to call this a modernized workforce that had the freedom to move around, to change, to get higher wages, to grow in management. They didn't have that. It was owned by the state. And that was pretty much the end of the story. So it is important in capitalism that we have an opportunity to innovate. We have an opportunity to be as effective as we possibly can in our companies. And we have the opportunities and the desire to be as efficient as we possibly can, so we can make as much money, that we can be as productive as possible. Yes, some would call that, the socialists would call that greed. It's not greed. It's not greed at all. It's doing what is necessary. It's doing the right thing for the company. It is giving people that work for that company the opportunity to get ahead. And those opportunities continue to go that way because the company is growing. They're making more money. They continue to expand. They need higher and higher skilled people. So the entry-level job person can move very quickly. The entry-level job person that moves very quickly into management can leave management and go to another company, doing the same thing, making more money. Maybe they can go out and start their own smaller company doing the same thing and have the opportunity to grow that company. There is no comparison. This isn't about greed. It's about opportunity. It's not about pushing down a group of people. It's about lifting up future generations. See, capitalism is about becoming the land of opportunity. And they need to be the land of opportunity if you're in a capitalist society like America, because we're going to need workers. We need people to want to come here. People aren't going to want to come here if the only opportunity they have is to get some mundane job making barely enough to put food on the table. That's what they're leaving. So it is not about greed. It's about always incentivizing, about always creating opportunity. Thanks for being with us. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget, be here tomorrow as we talk about unemployment and employment. Have a great day. God bless.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
All right, welcome back, Financial Issues. Hey, we got another hour and 10 minutes. We're doing rapid fire. Let's see how many calls we can take in the next hour and 10 minutes. 610-363-1110. That's the phone line. Let me go to Patty. Patty's calling us from Ohio. Hey, Patty.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
I want to make a little comment here for your new listeners to please listen to your program, stick by it. I've been a partner for about 4 or 5 years now, and I was so
overwhelmed
when I
overwhelmed.
Yes, when I first started, but I kept listening and I keep doing, and little by little, and it's amazing at how much you learn. I listen every day as much as I can, and every day it seems like I learn something. And I learn something by the questions other people ask. So there's never a wrong question. And I kind of play this little game with myself to see if I answer them close to how you would answer them, you know. So it's kind of fun that way. That's how I know that I'm learning. If I can give the same answer as you, I'm learning. It's a learning process. But to stick in there, and it's wonderful. And the little bit of money that you put out for your membership, it's so well worth it. And you get such a peace of mind knowing that your money is not in things that would grieve God's heart. Mm.
It is great. Patty, I thank you for that, because it is encouraging to other people to hear that coming from somebody that's been through it. It's one thing for me to say it, far more encouraging for them to hear you say it. And I appreciate it. We're really having a rough summer this summer. I'm not worried. I know God's got this. But it is just, we always have, every ministry has a rough summers, but ours a little bit rougher than usual for some reason. But hopefully it'll start picking up here when we get, next month. But I appreciate you saying that, because it is so encouraging to other people to hear people that have been through it. And you do learn. It is amazing how you learn if you pay attention and listen, and just little by little, like you say. So thank you for that, Patty.
Okay. I do have a quick question, and it's on behalf of my daughter. She asked me this question the other day, and I told her I wanted to get another opinion, and she probably knew whose opinion I was going to ask. She said that a while back she applied for a no-interest bank transfer credit card, and she only transferred enough money that she knew that she was going to pay off on her mortgage. Mm-hmm. And she had, applied to her mortgage, and she accomplished that. And she's thinking about doing it again so that hopefully it can get her mortgage paid off quicker. Yeah. And I just kind of wondered, I don't know how I feel about that. Well, I kind of do, but
here's why they do it, number one. And if she reads the fine print, in very, very fine print, barely able to read it, if she reads the fine print, she'll see why they do it. Why they do it is they are hoping that the majority of the people, which is true, won't do what she did. That at some point in time, one time, they will be one day late with a payment or, later. That's what they're hoping for. Because soon as that happens, all that is out the door and you get clobbered with very high interest. And, it starts what they were hoping to happen. So she has been fortunate that she is one of those people that obviously very diligent and has made every, payment on time and has done that. So the danger is don't ever slip, You know, don't ever get and they're banking on that. And so there is a sense of legitimacy to that, yes. You're not getting into the kind of debt that you would get into. You're not paying an exorbitant amount of interest, and it ends up becoming somewhat of a holding company. So I use credit card. I travel a lot, obviously. I got to use a credit card. I haven't carried cash in years. And I pay my credit card off at the end of the month totally. So there's no interest. So I'm not paying any interest, but it is a convenient thing, and it has a place. And I believe it's safer than carrying around cash. And more importantly to me, it helps me track everything and keep things itemized so that I kind of know what's going on. So I don't really have a problem with it, but I'm always nervous. I would never encourage people to do it because I'd be nervous that the person I'm encouraging is the person that 2 days later is going to get sick and miss their making their payment and are going to all of a sudden have 16% interest or worse yet, 25% interest on their credit card debt.
Yeah. Well, I do think that she would follow through with everything. She actually did this when she was going for her master's degree, and that's how she paid her master's.
Great. Good for her. Yeah, good for her.
So when she brought this up, she said she had done it once, and she was thinking about doing it again, and I don't know why she even asked, because she could obviously have done it, and I wouldn't have even known, but she wanted to know what I thought about that.
Well, if she were calling in, I would say this to her. If you do that, and you are making the scheduled payments, and there's no interest, why not make those scheduled payments directly to the mortgage company, you know, noting that they're for principal only, and you're going to accomplish the exact same thing. And yes, it may take you a little bit longer to get there, not a whole lot longer, but it's going to accomplish the same thing, and you have flexibility by doing that. You have the flexibility of, I can't do that this month, and or I can't do it right now, and it doesn't matter. It's not going to hurt anything. It's not going to change anything. So far better to do that, little by little. Just make sure, and I can remember many, many years ago doing this myself, of writing two checks. And I know the mortgage company hated it, but I would always write two checks. One would be for my mortgage payment, and the other would be just for principal. Instead of including it in one check and making a note of it that 800 hours of this is for principal only, I never wanted to risk the confusion because I know I never get it reversed. So I always did a separate check. And I would tell her to do the same thing because it's accomplishing the same thing.
Okay.
With more flexibility.
Yeah. That's basically how I felt about it. But, like I said, she was so diligent before and did it. And if that was something she was set on doing, I wouldn't be against it, you know.
And I wouldn't. If she said to me, I agree with you, Dan, that is the same thing, but I'm kind of set. I'd rather do this, get more money to it faster or whatever, for whatever reason, and I know I'm going to be diligent, I would say, don't do that. You're going to be it's not a big deal. You know, it inevitably accomplishes the same thing, but I think it's better from a credit standpoint to not have the other line of credit and just do it this way. Directly to the mortgage company.
Okay. Well, that answers that question.
Okay.
Thank you for your time. God bless you and your team, and have a great day.
And thank you for your encouragement, Patty. Sure do appreciate it. God bless. Folks, we're coming up at the end of this hour, but look, we got a line open right now, 610-363. 1110, 610, 363, 1110. You cue your call. If you, maybe you don't hear the show for the third hour, but we're still taking your phone calls. You don't have to have it on to call in. So maybe you're not able to hear it, or maybe you like listening to yourself on the radio. I mean, I don't know what the deal. It's still going to be recorded. You're still going to be able to go to the podcast or the recording and go back and hear that. So you still be able to do the same things. You just, your station, wherever you listen to it, is just not airing the third hour yet. But so still cue your call up, 610-363-1110. Also, social media, Facebook, FISM viewers, put your questions up. We will get to those. I promise you, when we get back, we'll start hitting those. I see George saying good morning and hoping that we have a good trip. It's going to be very much a working trip, but here's the thing. I'm counting on getting more sleep, and I'm excited about that. And I'm just assuming that it's our friend George from North Carolina. It doesn't say that, so I'm just assuming that. So thank you, George. I appreciate you. Your faithfulness, your incredible faithfulness to this ministry. So I thank you, George, for that. And Al saying, just commenting, thank you, Dan, you're the best. God bless you always. Thank you, Al, I appreciate that as well, writing that on Facebook. All right, folks, we're going to be right back after this break. If you got to leave us, have a wonderful day. We sure do appreciate you. We appreciate your support. We have the greatest listeners in all of talk radio. I believe that with all my heart because I get to meet so many of you when we do our town halls and such. So thank you, and I hope you'll stay with us if you can. More financial issues right after this.
Jesus said, go sell all that you have, give it to the poor, take up the cross, follow me. It's not your money I want your heart.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.